Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Except this episode is going to be slightly different. Instead of reviewing the book when I finished it, which I normally do, I'm going to review this book as I go through, because it's not just a single work, it's actually a serial work. What I'm going to be doing is reviewing a comic book or a graphic novel, or however you want to do it, or however you want to refer to it, and that is Watchmen. I've never read Watchmen before. People always say, oh, it's amazing, you should read it, you should review it, it's highly recommended by lots of listeners to the SFPIP. And I was like, well, you know, superhero stuff, that's kind of a genre to its own, but this does work in a way because it is, you know, an alternate history, and there are science fictional elements in it. And so the way I thought I'd do this is just as I go through issue by issue, talk about that issue and how I think the story is going. This is a thing that I've wanted to do for a while, is actually to, like, give my response to a work, to a story, as I go through. Maybe chapter by chapter wouldn't work very well. And, you know, I do it sometimes book by book. If there's a long series of books, I'll, you know, give my opinion of the first one, the second one. But I thought it'd be fun to do, like, a mini review of each issue of Watchmen as I go through and read it for the first time. If you've never read this, you can also read through it at the same time. Or, you know, I'll try to avoid the major spoilers and just talk about what I like about this book. But otherwise, this could be, as an experiment, this could be quite a fun journey. The reason I'm reviewing this now is because, well, I've always avoided watching the movie because I thought, well, I'll only watch the movie once I've seen the, once I've read the comic book all the way through. So, you know, I don't, it doesn't affect me. You know, a lot of people say it's a classic, but what happened was that there's a Comixology was bought by Amazon, and because they want me to download a new app or do something, I can't remember, whatever the issue is that Amazon wants to change stuff around with Comixology, they said, here, have a free $5 gift certificate. So I looked through and thought, well, what can I buy for $5? And I realized I could buy the first few issues of Watchmen for the $5, and I thought, well, if I read it, I'll continue on, and you know, if I like it, I'll continue on. And I've read the first two issues, and I really do like it. So what I'm going to do is continue buying it. And this is another thing that I really don't like: reading comics or graphic novels on paper. It just annoys me. Seeing the way that pages are laid out and seeing pictures from later on and stuff. I mean, Juliana and I talked about this when we reviewed Sagas Volume 1 and 2. Saga Volume 1 and 2. But it's just annoying for me, and the way that it is presented when I read it on my iPad mini with Retina screen, it's just really great how I can go through panel by panel. In Saga, I did it the other way around. I actually read it each full page, so I had a full page in front of me and read the full page. But I've got a feeling that Saga was written in the time when digital comics were a big thing, and, you know, it's created digitally, whereas here with the Watchmen, it's from a long time ago, and it had to be printed, and it was, you know, the most important thing wasn't clear art. The most important thing was getting a story into a certain number of pages for a sale. Of course, I'm talking off the top of my head here, but it feels like they needed to fit a lot of pictures onto one page to tell a complex story, whereas with a digital comic, it doesn't matter so much. You can spread it out a bit more. It seems a bit more freedom. So this is, like, the, as far as I can tell from the first two issues, the images are quite small and set out always in this very kind of tight grid, which on the iPad mini aren't very big, but when you do the automatic scrolling through the panels function, which you have on the Comixology app, it suddenly becomes a lot easier to see each individual panel. And then, of course, once I read the whole issue, I flick back through and see it again, like all the pages laid out, to sort of see how it lays out on the page. And that's quite a cool thing, because it kind of gives me a quick overview of the art and the visual storytelling as I go through, which you don't normally get just by looking at the story once through. So so I decided to check this out. So this is quickly going through episode by episode, issue by issue. So starting off with issue one, I don't know if these issues actually have different names. I guess the first one is, no, it doesn't have anything. It's just issue one with Watchmen, and this has got the very famous image of the smiley face badge, and it's got some blood on it. And I didn't really realize, because I've never read this before, that each of these I say each of them. I've read two issues so far. Seems to start off with a zooming in on a detail, and that's what's on the front cover. And judging by the views of the other front covers, yes, you've got a detail, and then the first page kind of zooms out and kind of sets a scene by zooming out from this, thing. From this little badge, this smiley face badge. And it zooms out, and it turns out that the comedian, who is a costumed hero, otherwise known as a superhero, has died. He has been thrown out of a window, and so other costumed heroes are interested in this because they're not normally found out, and it's a bit strange that one of them has been thrown out of a window. The police are saying, oh, it's just a robbery that went wrong. But Rorschach, who is another costumed hero, is looking into it. And this is setting the scene, and I wasn't sure how interested I would be in superheroes, and because I'm not really interested in superhero. I like some superhero movies, but I'm not really that enthusiastic about reading the comics. I was, never really that into it at all. But I actually thought this was like really engaging and really good and just very well written. Just artistically how it's not a linear story, how it's going backwards and forwards in time and laying stuff out, in a very clear way, but in a way that just shows how much more there is to come. I never thinking, oh, this is just issue one. It feels like everything has been decided already, like the whole thing has been finished, and then they start putting it out so they can keep going backwards and forwards through the story and through the art and fixing everything to make sure everything's perfect. I don't know if that's the case or not, but just reading it feels very accomplished, which is of course why it's probably one of the best-selling graphic novels or comic books of all time. But my point is about not being interested in like superheroes, because I'm never quite sure of the rules of superheroes. One of them will have a power, and then they'll have a different power, and then another power will be added on, and then someone else will come along with a different power. And I never really quite like that mismatching of like different. Different abilities. Like someone is just rich and has lots of gadgets, but someone else actually has more supernaturally or scientific-y, like science fiction-y powers going through it. So what I really like about this is that it's taking it from not like, oh, what happens if superheroes are real in the real world? It's more about not like what would happen if someone who is totally well-adjusted comes in and suddenly gets a new power or wants to pretend to be a superhero. It's more going back to the roots of it. It's like saying, forget what we know about superheroes. Let's actually go back. What would it be for one of these people to become a superhero? Like, for example, what I'm trying to say is that I made this in my Goodreads update when I was with issue two. I said, it's interesting to look at this. Oh no, I said, I'm not normally interested in superhero comics, but this still somehow is fresh and intriguing, even though I can now see every postmodern look at the genre from the time that this was written has drawn on this work heavily. And it really does work out in that way, that they, there's the movie Kick-Ass and the movie Incredibles and these other things, which the only way I actually know any superhero stuff is via movies, because I've never read the comics, I've never read the graphic novels or anything. But it always feels like these things are going, okay, so let's see how these characters would be in the real world if they were real characters. Or in the case of Kick-Ass, it's like, okay, someone knows what comic book heroes and superheroes are meant to be like and then tries to be like one of those people. Which is an interesting way of looking at the characters. But what I love about The Watchmen so far, after two issues, is like, okay, let's be based more in the real world. What kind of people would have to be the kind of people to get dressed up? Not that these people are wanting to copy like superheroes as they are now known, or when they were known in the 1980s. It's not like we know what comic book heroes are. We know what superheroes are. Let's see real people trying to copy them. It's more like, okay, what would they be like if they were real people? It's a subtle distinction, but one that really stands out to me as a very interesting take on it. So, yes, and it's kind of setting up the story. Again, I don't really have much story to go on. I really like the ending, actually, as well. At the beginning, it zooms down onto, it kind of zooms out, and you see this... you know, this smiley face that belong, this smiley face badge which belonged to the comedian, and it zooms out and zooms out and zooms at the side of a building, and you realize someone's been thrown out. And then at the very end of the book, it does exactly the same thing. I quite like this framing device that they put this little badge down, and then it zooms out and zooms out and zooms out and zooms out and goes up and up and up, and you realize that you're following the same journey, like that same zooming out, and it gives you a good framing. But then after the end of the comic, which is something I didn't realize existed at all, is that he goes, we present here excerpts from Hollis Mason's autobiography, Under the Hood, leading up to the time he became the masked adventurer, Night Owl, reprinted with permission of the author. And then you actually get like this really great fictionalized autobiography of one of the first costume comic book heroes, but he wasn't a comic book hero, he was a costumed hero in the real world, and what it's like, you know, going up, you know, his bit of backstory there. So that's issue one. Really like it. Setting up some of the characters. We meet Dr. Manhattan, or Dr. Manhattan, which I found quite interesting, and a lot of the other characters, which I'm sure I'll mention as we go through, but those are my first impressions. So, moving straight on to issue two, and then I will press pause and get back to issue number three when I read it. So, yeah, this is actually really good as well. I wasn't sure. It's like, oh, is all the good stuff in the first issue? No, issue two continues on. Really good. And my other note, you know, not just sort of like the view of these postmodern, like people say, oh, this person, like in, I remember again in The Incredibles, they say, never have a cape, don't have a cape. If you have a cape, it'll get caught in things and do that kind of stuff. And you realize that's taken exactly from here in Watchmen. Or maybe that was issue one, either issue one or issue two. They talk about someone with a cape, and his cape gets stuck in the revolving doors, and then he gets shot because he's stuck in a door. So you realize that kind of stuff has been taken directly from here. What I really like about this, let me bring it up here in Comixology, is in issue two. It starts off zooming out from a funeral and ends the same way in that same funeral, in the burial in the cemetery there by Edward Morgan Blake, who is the comedian. And here, it's really great because we get a fantastic view. I said before, what would it be like to actually become one of these costume heroes in a world where superheroes aren't very established? You know, you get the costume adventurers and costume heroes, and you get a lot more backstory about, you know, these costumed heroes getting together. And what I liked about this is that it concentrates very much on the backstory of the comedian, who was the first, or one of the first. And there was the comedian and the Night Owl and a few of these other characters around in the 1930s and into the 1940s. And you realize that to be this kind of person who is willing to get dressed up and to beat people up and to go out and fight crime, they have to be very damaged, really fucked up in some way, to be a costumed vigilante. And I said here, a fascist, a rapist, a self-publicist, a pervert, etc. Which is, it's very interesting, because normally a hero is a hero, and you get a very good origin story of you know, issue two is very much origin stories of these different characters and how they got together as the team. And then the extract in the back of Under the Hood, which is the Night Owl autobiography, it's saying, oh, this is how the Minutemen got together, the Minutemen being the group of superheroes that get together to fight crime. But our first big bit of action that we get with the comedian, what's he do? He was in Vietnam and got someone pregnant in Vietnam and then shot her because he didn't want to look after the baby. And like, this is our superhero. And a bit of Dr. Manhattan. And then the next big bit of action is them quelling a riot, kind of against, you know, civil unrest. I'm not entirely sure what it's to do about, but there's, you know, it's to do about policing and politics and all that kind of stuff. And our heroes are out there, like, firing gas into the middle of well, it's not even a riot, it's like a protest. And you get the famous "Who Watches the Watchmen" graffiti, because these are the Watchmen. These are meant to be the good guys, or the costumed heroes, the costumed adventurers, the costumed vigilantes. And you realize that these guys are maybe not the good guys. And I really like the ambiguity there, like you say, of these people who just break people's fingers and beat people up. It's a very rough and ready. But then you realize that's what all superhero stuff would be if they didn't have miraculous superpowers, if they just had to rely on human might and power and violence. I mean, that you'd have to rely on the violence just to get it done, unless you're a Bruce Wayne kind of superhero. And then you realize, well, Bruce Wayne, he doesn't kill people and he tries to use his intellect, but he's got so much money. Why doesn't he just set up charities? You know, probably the best way to deal with social problems in Gotham City isn't to go out and beat up criminals and to try and put a few criminals in jail. It's to spend your billions of dollars instead of spending it on a car and a Batmobile and a costume and a cave and all these kind of stuff. Why don't you spend it on social problems and use your money to alleviate social problems in Gotham City? And you realize, wow, this city where this is taking place, Watchmen is taking place, New York, it really needs that. You know, it's the real scummy 1980s New York. Of course, it's a parallel New York. It's an alternate history in New York. But there is some good stuff going on there. What else did I want to say? Yeah, it starts and ends in the cemetery. And again, it's got this fantastic backwards and forwards through time framing story of people. But it's not just sort of like, oh, here is a bit, and then we go back in time and we'll have this story from back in time. And then here, it's like panel by panel, and the way that the panels are set out in this kind of grid of nine panels, but some of them overlap. So there's often like seven panels, nine panels, six panels as you go through. It's like a panel is from there, a panel is from here, a panel is from there, a panel is from here. And it's very, as we were saying before about, the Ender's Game movie and book, you know, it's very artfully done. And I appreciate the skill and storytelling that goes into this, which is something that I haven't seen from other graphic novels, admittedly from my very, very, very narrow experience with graphic novels, especially of the superhero variety, the comic book superhero variety, which I just start, and every time I've started them, I've just never got more than halfway through an issue or got to the end of one issue and just never managed to carry on. But this one really does impress me. So, and what was it going on? What was the bit at the end? Let me see if I can... under the hood. In these chapters, Hollis Mason discusses the formation of the Minutemen. Oh, I mentioned that before. So that's it for now. I will come back and talk about issue number 3 after I finish it. Okay, here we go. Issue number 3 of Watchmen by Alan Moore and Dave... what was his name? Dave Gibbons? Yeah, Dave Gibbons. I'm not sure if I even mentioned that when I started off, when I recorded that first part earlier today. But here we go. Issue number 3. What do I like about this? Starting off, you got the front cover is right there. And it says Fallout Shelter and a big yellow sign and, you know, with smoke going up past it. And, of course, this is what I said before. You zoom out from this and you get the main part of the issue. The framing device in this issue I find really interesting, which is someone sitting at a newsstand and there's big events going on. They're invading, the Russians are invading Afghanistan because it's set in the 1979. No, when is it set? When did they invade Afghanistan? I don't know. But... whatever's going on, they're going to be invading Afghanistan at this point. And there's a kid sitting next to the newspaper seller, who's reading a comic who I'm guessing he's just taken off of the stand and he's reading it. And I think that's made clearer at the end of that, isn't it? So, and all the way through this comic, this issue, you've got somebody reading a comic within the comic and you're getting all the extracts. So every scene has got a bit of what's really going on. Not every panel, but a lot of these panels have got also a panel of dialogue from the other one. And I was reading this and I was flicking back between them. It's like, oh, should I be reading this and that and this and that? And I kind of managed to keep two different comics in my head. One, the comic I'm reading, and then the other one, the comic within a comic of a shipwreck survivor, a pirate adventure. And I always thought, hey, this guy that I've seen going around in the background with this, the end is nigh, sign going around protesting the end is nigh, I'm sure he's going to come in and play a bigger part, and he does actually play slightly bigger part in this one. So I realized that this one is really setting up, okay, who is this guy, the big blue guy, Dr. Manhattan, John, his name is, and it doesn't make it that clear. I'm guessing he is he was caught in a nuclear explosion or nuclear accident, but he was revealed in 1960 to be a real world, like a real life superhero. We have all these other superheroes, but these guys are just costumed costumed heroes rather than superheroes, and it's made very clear that, no, now we have a real superhero. He can bend space and time, or at least space, and he can walk through walls, and there's a great sex scene here where he disturbs his girlfriend, long-term lover, by being more than one of him, so there can be two of him at the same time, and and because he's becoming less and less human over time, he's not really quite sure what's going on. So, yeah, the crisis with Dr. Manhattan, what's going to happen with him? What's going to happen between him and Laurie, who I guess is the Silk Spectres, the old Silk Spectres' daughter, who also becomes a Silk Spectre. So what I really like about this is it kind of lays out a lot more the different generations of the heroes. There was a Night Owl, and now there's another Night Owl, and then there's a Silk Spectre, and then the Silk Spectre's daughter, who also becomes... or wants to become the next Silk Spectre. And but also, it's not just a generational thing in, like, this is the old Night Owl, a new Night Owl, but we really get, like, this is the old way of being a superhero, and now here's the new way of being a superhero. The old way was being a costumed hero, a human dressing up as a superhero, as a costumed hero. And then we get Dr. Manhattan, who really does have superpowers, like real superpowers. He can teleport through time, can grow and shrink, can be more of him or less of him. It's a very interesting way of looking at the kind of generations of powers as they come and go. Another thing that I really liked about this, apart from like the real introduction of his story and what, you know, how Dr. Manhattan being there impacts the world, even though we don't have his full backstory so far, what I really enjoy is that this is, it seems to be about, like, again, these, not just about, like, the previous issue two was very much about, like, the origin stories. This is how we got together. This is how this person started up. Even though it was about a funeral and the other one was to do about death. And I realized, actually, the genius of this, of the Watchmen, which really came home to me here in issue number three, is that it's about the end of superheroes. It's about the end of these costumed vigilantes rather than about the origins. And it always seems to be these movies or these, you know... The comics and the movies, or certainly the movies, it's sort of like, okay, here's the superhero. How did the superhero get here? Here it is. It's Batman Begins. It is Superman number one again. And then there's another Superman. And there's a Spider-Man. And here is another Spider-Man. And here's the X-Men. And here's the X-Men Begins, X-Men Origins. And here's another Origins. And here's the First Class. And it always goes back to the start of the story. You always see the founding origin stories of these characters. And what we have here is like, here is a character, and it starts with one of the characters dying. Here is one of the comic book characters or costumed heroes, and he dies. And here is another one, and he retires. And here is another one who gets married and leaves the scene. And here is another one who may or may not die, but they disappeared. And here is another one who had to give up his identity, and he went to live and work in a garage. And here is another one who is still well-known, and he got his publicity, but now he's very a rich businessman because he's super intelligent like that. It's all about people not being heroes anymore. And also the villains, too. It's like, he says, I used to be the villain, I'm not the villain anymore. And again, it's just so refreshing to read that kind of story. Now, I'm sure that there's lots of other comics that have done this, but this is the first time that I've been exposed to this idea, because I'm never really interested in, like, I actually quite like the origin stories that I see in the movies. But then when it's just like, okay, this person's just going to be hanging around and they're going to fight crime, and they always seem to leave the world kind of how it was when it began, or maybe didn't, I'm not quite sure. But here it's like it's the interesting look. It's like the anti-origin story. We do find out a bit of origins, but really just to see like what happens to these heroes once they're out of the scene. How they die, how they get away. And we get the same thing with all of these characters. There's like one, the new Night Owl, the young Night Owl, seems to be the only one who hasn't walked away from her job, walked away from his job and his role. Everyone else seems to be going, nope, that's not me anymore. I have retired. I'm not doing that anymore. This is not my kind of thing. I guess Rorschach as well. Rorschach's walking around too. So you've got a Night Owl and a Rorschach. And apart from that, everyone else has either given up, died, or is leaving. And we have the same thing with Dr. Manhattan in this one, where he decides to go off to the desert, and then which it looks like he goes to a nuclear wasteland, and then he goes off to Mars. And it's a fantastic, you know, the newspaper seller is like, Dr. Manhattan leaves Earth. Yes, here he goes. Goodbye. And you get this fantastic view of, again, this kind of switching frames, like every other frame, every other panel image is Dr. Manhattan walking around and sitting down on Mars. And it's a fantastic last image of him just going, just sitting there on a rock, you know, holding this little bit of photograph and just looking at the camera going, I'm kind of lonely, but not sure what to do here. Whereas at home, all the bad stuff's going. And that's a framing device. It starts on this image of the fallout shelter. And at the end, you've got the same kind of danger, radioactive waste, or radioactive symbol thing stuck on a map of the Earth. So it's, I really enjoyed the framing of the comic around the comic, the starting off with the nuclear stuff going, and also just like the overall framing that we have now. We're on issue 3, and we've had the origin stories of all of these, and then we're coming into the end stories already. So I'm not quite sure where it goes from here, because it kind of feels like if there wasn't the mystery of who killed the comedian, this could be like an overall arc that I'd actually be very happy just to have read that at the moment. Under the Hood, it says chapter 5, even though it's issue 3. Presented here are excerpts from Under the Hood. In this next chapter, Hollis Mason discusses the traumas of the 1950s and the emergence of the new superheroes. Like I say, that new generation that gets passed on and what he did. Sally Jupiter marries Lawrence Schneider. And Hooded Justice. You know, who was Hooded Justice? He was the only one who never revealed it, and we hear about how he might have ended. And I realized, of course, at the end you've got this this clock which is counting down to midnight, and I'm guessing that's the atomic Armageddon clock. You know, it's sort of like how many seconds to midnight are we? And this one is at 9 minutes to midnight. So if we think there's 12 issues overall, I'm sure by the end I should actually probably go back and check the last page of the previous ones to work out what they would be at the very end. Let me see here. Nothing is more interesting than listening to someone scroll to the back of a comic book. Yeah, what's the time at the end of this one? Is it going to be 12 minutes to midnight? It is 12 minutes to midnight, so that's another little thing that I noticed coming up to the end of this. So we're counting down to midnight. What is going to happen at midnight? I don't know, but I'm interested to find out. So I will continue buying these issues and continue reporting in to you, my listeners, via one episode. Hopefully this won't last too much longer. See if as I read these new issues, I will just give a lot brisker thoughts. I think I've kind of wrapped up what I'm really enjoying about this already. Maybe get into some other parts as we go on. So that's it for now. And next up, issue number 4. Watchmen podcast update for issue number 4. And all I can say is this is probably one of the... it's one of those experiences where you someone has told you something is good. And I know this is... I've probably mentioned this already. Someone tells you something is good. And you go, oh, well, how good can the Watchmen really be? You know, it's really influential. But, you know, what level could this actually be when it comes in? And I realized that reading this issue number 4 of the Watchmen, that it's just exceeding my expectation in a way that I didn't even know a comic book could. You know, you see a good movie and you're like, well, that was a good movie. You see a really good movie and you're like, oh, that was a really good movie. But I just don't actually have any of those things, like any of those references with comics to do. And so this issue number 4, it's reached a peak and I'm like, can it sustain this? Can it get better? Is it just going to get worse? I mean, what's going to go on after issue number 4? Because it's just one of the most amazing storytelling devices or storytelling processes. I was chatting to a friend in the park yesterday, and we were talking about, oh yeah, like the iPad with a Retina screen is kind of made for comic reading, because not only can you see the whole page, you can zoom in and see individual panels, but it's kind of like in this issue, you kind of need to see a whole page at once, or if not the whole page at once, you need to kind of contain every page and all of the pages in the issue at once, because it tells the story. Of course, people who've read this are like, yeah, duh, but it tells the backstory of Dr. Manhattan. He's sitting on Mars and he's looking at a photograph, and it says, the photograph is in my hand. In 12 seconds, I drop the photograph to the sand at my feet, walking away. It's already lying there 12 seconds into the future. So the whole chapter is told from the point of view of what it would be like to someone who doesn't just exist in one point in time, any one point of time. They exist in all points of time, in future and past, for their whole life, at every moment. He is experiencing every moment in every moment. I mentioned before that I wasn't sure if Dr. Manhattan could go through space and time. I knew it was definitely space, but I was thinking, well, there's two of him at once. Does that mean he's there, like, does he loop back around and he's there by, is it time travel that there's more than one of him at the time, or can he just split his being apart and create another one of himself but still only be one of himself? So maybe that's a different thing, but it's just amazing to see, not even just to read about what it's like to be a being which exists at every point in time, or every point of your life and time. I've read that story many times in science fiction. You know, there's lots and lots of different aliens who don't have a concept of future and past. They only have a concept of now and are constantly living in a now and are aware of their future and past all at the same time. But I realize that you can only really do that with, reading it as a comic strip, in a graphic novel, in a graphic form of sequential art, is a fantastic way of doing it, because it doesn't become sequential. Then it becomes 9 panels that you don't have to read in order. You can actually read these panels almost in any order and it still makes sense. And I think this is very clear because the imagery, there's lots of, it's not told in sequence. It's sort of like, it's August 7th, 1945. It's 1948. I'm here. And then it goes, it's 1969. And then it goes back to 1966. You know, every panel is a different one. There's 4 panels or 5 panels in a row, which give a little bit of a story, a little vignette, and then it skips somewhere else. So like I say, you can see at any point 9 panels of everything, and it tells his backstory of how he became Dr. Manhattan and how it affected his relationship and how it got him into the relationship and out of it. And I really love the imagery of the broken clock, the exploded watch. I mean, there's lots and lots of clocks on this. You know, there's a count. I'm just seeing here, there's a countdown clock on the machine. There's, at one point, he's standing in front of a picture of the melting time by Salvador Dali. Loads of this kind of stuff. But the image that keeps coming back is that his father was a watch repairer, and he is at the beginning of the story. He's going, I am here and I'm repairing this watch, and that keeps coming back. And it, like, as we see his entire story laid out with nothing in the future and nothing in the past, like this story exploded from time, we see this watch all the time, and he's moving these pieces around the watch. And of course, the individual cogs in the watch aren't individual moments of time, but it's like time is spread out, and you can see all of time laid out on a black bit of fabric. And then they throw the cogs over the balcony. It's like, the cogs are falling. Sometime back in New York, the cogs are still falling into the. How can I skip forward through the pages? And that's how it begins and ends. And this imagery comes all the way through. So I'm very, very impressed by this, mainly because I had a storytelling experience or experience which can't be done, or hasn't. I've never had that experience in reading a novel, never had it with movies, never had it with anything except here for the first time in a comic book format. You know, on the cover of the Time magazine, there is a damaged watch stopped the instant of the blast. That's of the Hiroshima. And also there's a stopped clock, and then there's a countdown and all this kind of stuff. Hands frozen in time. It's very impressive. And then at the end, I'm standing in the fire escape in 1945, reaching out to stop my father, take the cogs and flywheels from him, piece them all together again. But it's too late. It always has been and always will be too late. So the idea of having a photo and dropping it and these cogs falling through time. And then at the end, I recently watched the movie Frozen, and there's the whole let it go sequence. And she builds it, and she makes herself a dress, and then she goes, "Oh," and it creates this big ice tower out of nothing that kind of pops up from the ground. And Dr. Manhattan does that on Mars. And I'm thinking, did the people who watch Frozen, get the reference from The Watchmen or not? I don't know, but it seems pretty cool. And then at the very end, instead of being extracts from the autobiography, we got Professor Milton Glass extracts from his book Dr. Manhattan, or a report called Dr. Manhattan, Superpowers and the Superpowers. In other words, someone with superpowers and how it upsets the balance between America and Russia in the Cold War, the superpowers. And that was a very interesting thing. Maybe all comics have good academic-style works explaining the politics and things behind the actions of superheroes, but for some reason I can't imagine it. And then here we have Watchmen. Oh, I guess Watchmen is another watch that he's fixing there. So lots and lots of layers, and the watch is now 8 minutes to midnight, because I've got 8 issues left to go. See how this goes on. So here we are, Watchmen issue number 4, and I realized actually at the very beginning, I didn't know there was names for these, but of course there is some text which normally comes up on the third or fourth page in, and this one is called Fearful Symmetry, and if I was paying attention, I would have noticed that all of these actually have a name, and this is, the Fearful Symmetry thing is this is much more continuing the story of Rorschach, and the comedian has died, and Rorschach is trying to find out who killed the comedian, who is killing, or trying to kill these other masked, no, what do they call them, costumed heroes. And yes, and I think that's kind of the name gives away the main theme of this. There's some really great symmetry things. We had watches all the last time, and now it's all mirrors. You know, the front cover has some different, it's a sign, and there's like an R and an R, and that's reflected. There's the two R's reflect themselves, plus the cross, the skull and crossbones. There's no skull, but there is a crossbones. Well, I guess the two R's are meant to be a skull. Yes, I guess that's so. But it's upside down and reflected, so the symmetry is coming with different reflections. And the colors are reflected. Every other panel is like a different color. You get the blue color and the orange color. I think this is a very clever thing of actually tying into the face of the main character. And I keep wondering, like, how much is this, you know, the guys were working together, Dave Gibbons I keep forgetting the name of the main writer. Alan Moore, yeah. So whoever it is, these guys, they're working together. Like, what were the notes where they were saying, oh, this is the color scheme? Or was it just sort of like, okay, we've written this? Or how collaborative? I'm not really sure about this. But what I do really enjoy is actually then right at the very end, and I've mentioned this before, there's always like this extract from a book or a report. And this was sort of like the history of the comic, which is inside the comic, which I mentioned, I think, when I was talking about issue number 3, when there's a kid reading a comic inside the comic, and it's a pirate comic, and this is a different pirate comic. You see there's a skull and crossbones there, which is like reflected on the front cover of this issue, and it's about this guy who is stranded and makes a raft and then sets off, and there's dead bodies and sharks and stuff. And I actually really quite enjoy the comic within the comic. I don't think if I was just to read that, it would be so unrelentingly grim. I don't think I could ever read it all the way through. It's terrible. It's like when they're making The Simpsons, and Matt Groening was asked, well, why don't you just do like a whole itchy and scratchy cartoon? He says, no, it is way too violent. You couldn't watch it all the way through with that level of violence all the way through. It only works by contrast with the rest of it. And it seems like that's what we've got the same thing here. If this comic was actually me just reading that comic with the pirate comic, what was it called? The Black Freighter. A Man on 15 Dead Men's Chest. By Joe Orlander, around about 1953. This is what they're talking about at the end of the book here. Tales of the Black Freighter. And again, it's sort of like it's telling the story about the history of that and how the two people worked together and that they stuck around and stuck together for the first, I think, 12 issues, the first writer and artist. But of course, it's a fake comic. But then I'm thinking, well, these guys are talking about making comics, and it's kind of like the symmetry of this. Is it like, well, they only planned this out for 12 issues and then it wasn't going to work anymore? I mean, like, is it a comment on how many issues like this is going to last? Like, it's only did they actually say how many issues that the artist worked with? Anyway, it was an interesting look, and I do like the overall story on this. It isn't as good as the storytelling in issue number 4. But after issue number 4, which was all backstory, it's like, oh, no, we really need to get on with the plot here. So let's move the story forward. We need to find out about this. The only thing that I'm a bit annoyed about is that what happens at the end with Rorschach and being captured by the police, I'm thinking, well, wasn't this guy, he's been like operating for ages and ages without being caught, and now suddenly he's been caught? And I was like, is that just part of the, you know, I mean, he was set up, but like how easy should it have been for the police? I don't know, it suddenly seems easy, so we'll see how this goes. And it really, again, it does show just how little superheroes these guys have. Rorschach, his superhero, I mean, he's got a weird mask, I don't know how that works, but his superpower seems to be sneaking around. He's like a detective, like private investigator, and he seems quite, you know, he's a bit of a kind of Batman figure, kind of gravelly voice, and using his wits to get around. Although there's the other guy is the millionaire, or the billionaire, who owns a lot of stuff. But at the end, he jumps through a window and crashes down, and you're thinking, oh, okay, he's a superhero. No, he's not. He goes down and twists his ankle and gets beaten up by the cops. And of course, the book ends there with once again the reflection of the symmetrical R's and the crossbones, the skull and crossbones thing, which is again reflected in the thing. So it's lots of interesting visual storytelling. I'm not quite sure what it all means, but there's a lot of good stuff in here. So that's it for issue 5. Moving on to issue number 6, which is coming up. Oh, and what is it? It is now what? That's 7 minutes. 7 minutes to midnight. Back to my books. And the next one, yes, issue 6, actually has the Rorschach face on it, or something, some kind of ink block test from the Rorschach. So I'll read that tonight and record a new podcast bit about it tomorrow. Let's see how it goes. So issue number 6 means I'm halfway through. And issue number 6, as I realized at the beginning, but starts off with a Rorschach test image right in the front cover, and it zooms out, and it's Rorschach having a Rorschach test done on him, which is suddenly all like, ooh, Rorschach and Rorschach test. And so that's what this is. The title that you find a few pages in is "The Abyss Gazes Also," which is part of a very famous quote. What we have here is kind of more backstory. And I was thought at this point the plot was progressing, but the plot only progresses. Like, they introduce a character of the Doctor who is talking to Rorschach, otherwise known as Walter Joseph Kovacs. And you know, he has a story here, but otherwise it is Kovacs telling his story via what he sees in Rorschach test. You've got the cool people kissing silhouette thing, which has also been put up as spray paint around the place. And I'm thinking, well, has that got anything to do with him, or was that somebody else, or was that Rorschach himself? Anyway, but then we get into, yeah, like I say, the backstory, the origin story of Kovacs, and a little bit more about the Watchmen, or the Minutemen, or whatever the group of friends that he's called. But yeah, we get more backstory, and I don't really have very much else to say about this. You know, it was quite an obvious story. Well, not the obvious story, but like the overall layout of this. Once you saw this thing, it's like, what do you see here in this Rorschach test? And he goes, and you see what he's thinking in his memories, and he goes, some pretty flowers or a butterfly, you know. And we know that by the end of it, it's going to he's going to flip it around, and we're going to find out what's really going on. It is an interesting story, but like, it feels a bit too backstory-ish. I thought there was a main story going on, and what we seem to have here with Watchmen is that we get like an issue with a little bit of story in, and then an issue which is backstory, and then an issue with a little bit of story on. But the story that's happening doesn't feel like it's. If it keeps going on this pace, this main story isn't actually that big of a story, or it can't be that big of a story, unless at this point we don't have any more backstory, and then we just have story all the way through to the end. I'm not quite sure how it's going to work out. But like I say, but then again, the backstory that I am getting, I do enjoy it, but I'm kind of slightly too impatient now. I want to get on with, I kind of want to just get on with the the main story. I want to know why people are being killed. I want to know what's going to happen with the nuclear war and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we get through to the end. Battle not with monsters, lest ye become a monster. And if you gaze into the abyss gazes also into you. And then at the end of that, we get it's the very end of it. Of course, we zoom back into the Rorschach test thing at the end, with a pretty good thing, a pretty good quote there from our doctor. What was his name? Dr. Malcolm. And then at the end, afterwards, we get the little supplemental material is like police reports, New York Police Department, Manhattan, and it's the file or, you know, a case file about Walter J. Kovacs, who is actually Rorschach. And it kind of just fills it in, and it just says, oh, this is what we know about him. But it doesn't really, it doesn't add very much, of course, because we already know what people think he might have been like, and we already know that he was actually very violent, but the police didn't know his violence, and they didn't know the reasons for his violence, but we already did know all of that. And then there's this little bit about, you know, from a psychiatric hospital where he was at, and then when he was at a boarding school, he was taken away from his mother, of course, so he was in a foster care school. And yeah, once again we get this weird picture of two people kissing, but kind of like how Kovacs sees it when he was young, and a bit about from his dream. And again, it's nice, but it doesn't have the same, you know, like the rest of the supplementary material so far seems to like be filling stuff in that I didn't already know, and it's like, oh, that was really worth reading. This is the first time I read some at the end which wasn't quite worth reading. Anyway, and then we get to the watch at the back of Watchmen issue 6, and it's now 6 minutes to midnight. And so that means I'm halfway through the story. Hopefully the second half picks up a bit, but it's only been these last two issues. I think after issue number 4, these last two have been a bit of a dip down, but issue 6 was a dip down after issue 5 again. I didn't really feel like I was getting anything new from this, except the backstory, which is fine. I like backstory, but like I say, kind of want to move on. Let's see how this goes. So this one is a Brother to Dragons. It's issue number 6 of The Watchmen, and this is one of those times where before I was complaining, hey, when are we going to get on with the story? Why is it all backstory at the time? Well, let's get on with the story. And this is not backstory. I mean, there's a little bit of backstory, but mostly it's about two people kind of getting together in a flying egg and realizing, or, you know, first then trying to have sex and then realizing that they can't get sex until they're all dressed up, and then they have sex, and it's really uncomfortable and really weird. And after reading it, I was thinking, well, maybe I like the backstory better than the current story, because this isn't really the current story. There's like 3 panels in this whole comic which actually kind of moves the plot forward. It is character building. It's kind of showing what's happening. It's kind of going, maybe we should get the team back together. Maybe we should move on with this. But what's going to happen here? Hey, I think we should do this. And it ends with hey, I think we should do this. And it's 5 minutes to midnight. Don't really have much else to say about this one. See how the next one goes. This is number 8, issue number 8. I thought it was number 7, but it turns out the last one was number 7, even though I said it was number 6. And this one is number 8. So it starts off there's a statue, like a medal kind of statue kind of thing, statuette in gratitude, and then they zoom out from there, and don't zoom out very far on this one, just around the corner, and two people having a conversation. It's two of the old guard of the Minutemen. Anyway, this is a kind of like the issues are really picking up now. Like I say, I think this is the first one where there isn't any backstory, isn't anybody pondering about what happened in the past. It's kind of filling in some of what's going on right now. Rorschach is in jail, and the other guys are like, hey, let's bring him out. So that's one plot that's going on. Also, there's this riots going on in the street, which has kind of got something to do with what Rorschach's getting up to in jail. There's a police detective that comes in and is trying to work out who the new Night Owl is. Dr. Manhattan turns up again, and everything's really going on. Now, also at the same time as this, we've got this stuff going on with the dread pirate thing, the dread freighter, I think it's called, the dark freighter, whatever that one is. Anyway, the comic within a comic, the pirate comic within the comic, carries on. It comes back in. There's the young guy sitting there reading it at the newsstand, and this newsstand is where quite a lot of the story is taking place, because that's where Rorschach was going when he was, buying his newspapers there. And he would buy this newspaper and that newspaper. And one newspaper that he bought was the New Frontiersman, which is some kind of super right-wing Nazi kind of agitation paper thing going on at the end. And also it seems like this, even though they're saying, hey, honor is sometimes, this is the extract at the end, you know, the long written material that's included at the end, after the end of the comic, and it's the New Frontiersman, honor is like a hawk, sometimes it must go hooded. And that's what there's lots of you know, illustrations of hawks, and there's a calendar with birds in it, and that's got a hawk reference there as well. Of course, there's the night owl and his owl little blimp that's going around. And yeah, and all that kind of stuff. Another thing that's happening, like, oh yeah, I said about this newsstand that goes on, and people go like, hey, these masked vigilantes, these adventurers, all these different names that they call themselves, let's go kill one. One of them lives around here, so one of them gets killed at the end. But what I found interesting about this new frontiersman is what they say. Oh, and here's a missing persons report. Suddenly, halfway through this comic, or maybe not halfway through, a part of the way through the comic, suddenly it goes, hey, and now there's this painter painting a squid or alien or something that's in it, or in a movie set. I'm not quite sure what's going on there. And it seems, and I recognize the name of the artist and the author of this comic, and then at the end it says, hey, this comic book writer, this author, and this artist have gone missing, and we don't know where they are. And it's like, well, hey, we just saw them before. So I'm sure that's going to come in very handy for plot reasons later on, that these two people who suddenly just pop up, and it's like, and now? Yeah, there was actually two sections that where people just pop up while the guys are getting ready to spring Rorschach out, and just flicking back through here on page 11. It's like the new frontiersman editor and office person is they're making that issue. And then meanwhile, what they're making the issue about, this report of this missing artist and mysteriously disappeared comic book author, they're just hanging out together, painting a picture of a thing. Not quite sure. Anyway, so it's quite interesting. Suddenly the story's picked up a bit, and it's much better than continuing backstory, and a lot more interesting than the previous issue, which was just people having sex in an owl-shaped blimp, or an owl-looking blimp, which just was a bit uncomfortable. So anyway, yes, now it is 4 minutes to midnight, and we are on with the next issue. When I did my Goodreads update for issue number 8, I said, yes, it's great, the story is continuing, but I'm afraid that we might get another whole issue of backstory coming up and interrupting the flow of actually what seems to be important, what's going on here. And I was presumed that it was going to be, hey, who's this Ozymandias character, the most intelligent man and richest man in the world, or, you know, who lives down in Antarctica or maybe in Manhattan. Anyway, the two of the characters, the Night Owl and Rorschach, they were leaving, and they're like, hey, we've got to get out of here. And I was like, well, where can they go? There's only one place they can go, and it's probably to see Ozymandias, so we're probably going to get his backstory now. However, there was two other characters, Lainey, I think it's Lainey the Night Owl, not Night Owl, the new Silk Spectre, and she disappears off with John, or Dr. Manhattan, and actually we follow them, and they go up to Mars, away from all the action, and have a conversation about, you know, shall Dr. Manhattan come back and help save the world, or is the world just going to be left? And there's that conversation. However, that conversation, while they're flying around Mars on a spaceship and seeing the whole of Mars, they have this conversation about backstory, which isn't bad, but it was a bit obvious. I think it's meant to be a twist. It's like a big reveal. It's like, oh, ha, ha, and this is who your father is. And it's like, yeah, but wasn't that obvious, like, from, like, 6 or 7 issues ago? I can't remember. So, the big reveal of what was going to happen was not a big reveal to me. However, it was a big reveal to the character, and it was a thing that she broke down in tears that kind of convinces Dr. Manhattan to come back down to Earth again. So while the story did progress a little bit, the progression of the story, the overall story, could be summed up as Dr. Manhattan decides to go back to Earth. And the whole of the story, all of this issue is revolving around then by retelling this backstory and flying around on Mars. There was this pretty cool part where she says, okay, land right now. And, you know, and he says, what, land right now on Argaea Planitia, which I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. But I read that and I thought, hey, wait a second, isn't that the place on Mars where there's the smiley face crater? And then, of course, at the end, we zoom out and they have landed directly in the smiley face crater on Mars, which is quite funny. And then they zoom out. And this is one of the first times where at the beginning it's kind of like on an object and it zooms out from the object. And then normally at the end of these issues, it kind of zooms back in. And I thought the object that it was zooming out and zooming in on was this kind of perfume spray perfume bottle. But then at the end, that's not there anymore. And we've just got the star field. And I was thinking, well, maybe was the thing that was featured that it was zooming out from and back into the perfume bottle, or was it the stars in the background? And it turns out by what we're looking at here, it might have been the stars in the background, because that kind of plays into the themes of this. Don't have very much else to say about this. Oh, what was it called? Issue number 9, The Darkness of Mere Being. Yeah, at the end, we get the updates. It's some newspaper clippings and some stuff, once again, from the original Silk Spectre's backstory. Oh, yeah, we're going to make a film about you. Great. And, of course, it turns out just to be a porn film, which is mildly amusing, but not a huge amount there. And, yes, of course, then with Sally Jupiter, who is the first... Silk Spectre, there's an interview with her about the rape case that was, the case of rape, let me put it that way, which was an interesting little interview there. It's 3 minutes to midnight, and hopefully we get on with the main story again. I'm only reading these issues like a day or a few days apart. It would have been really annoying if I was reading this as it was coming out. I guess it was like a weekly thing or maybe a monthly thing. Maybe it took a whole year to get through this. It would have been very infuriating for me to spend a month each time looking at these issues rather than just a day. I guess that's why I always wait for things to come out fully and then go back and watch them in my own time rather than having to wait for stuff. Anyway. Yes, what did I say? 3 minutes to midnight. Next up, issue number 10. We are up to issue 10 of 12. Here we go. And it's, DEFCON 2. We see the front cover, and it's of a video screen of a radar showing, hey, incoming birds or incoming riders or incoming something. And even though it's pretty obvious now that that any time that you think, hey, there's some reflection on that which looks a little bit like a smiley face, has that got anything to do with the overall themes and the continuing smiley face kind of stuff going on, like what's going on here? And then you go, well, is a DEFCON 2, so are there rockets coming in? Is it nuclear weapons coming in? It turns out, no, it's the planes of the president and the vice president, President Nixon, in this book. He's coming in and he's going to go into this underground place, and it's all safe there from things like that. And normally at the... let's just keep going on with it. Let me get to the overview of this whole thing. So I was a bit worried that on the last one, it's like, oh, are we just going to get more backstory? Are they going to go... I thought, hey, these two guys, they're going to go and see Ozymandias, because what else are they going to do? Of course they're going to go and see Ozymandias. And that's what they discover. They discover that that's the guy that they have to go and see. They look around, they try and get some information from the underworld, that works out, they hide out and things. But of course, as in the end, they go to visit Ozymandias in his Manhattan Tower and then go and visit him down in Antarctica, pretty much how I thought it was going to happen. And story is moving on, and we discover who is behind this, and it seems like this is the guy. And normally, like I said before, at the beginning of the book, we zoom in, like there's a thing in like an object that we're zoomed in on, and then we zoom out from it and out and out and out and get the wider story. And then at the end, we get that same callback to that same object. In the last episode, I can't remember if I mentioned this when I was talking about it last time, that it was there was a perfume bottle. Yeah, I think I did mention it. And it wasn't the perfume bottles that we were in. We saw the stars, and the flash shot was on the stars. Here, we have this thing, this radar, this screen showing the outside world. And it says two riders were approaching... And that could have been the two jets, the Air Force One and Air Force Two, with the president and the vice president coming in. And then at the end, we don't get more jets, but we get two guys, Night Owl and Rorschach. And they are now approaching Ozymandias in Antarctica, riding on two things. And the screen that we see at the end is Ozymandias seeing them coming and saying, ah, this is pretty cool. So we don't get any Ozymandias backstory, but he is the main feature of this, like I thought it would be, because like I say, he's the one of the remaining things. So I'm thinking, what are we up to now? We've got two more to go. Issues 11 and 12. 11 will be Ozymandias' backstory and the reason why he's doing this, and number 12 will be actually what happens when we get there. Because while I really appreciate the artistry of how this is put together, the layering of images and the reflection of images and all these different kind of things, it feels like it's not too much forced, but like it's becoming more and more obvious. I liked it when it was either totally obvious what was going on with the artificiality of the references playing off each other and someone saying one thing in one panel and it coming in the next one. But now it feels like, it's been done to death, and in some ways I'd rather have less to talk about in this kind of thing. It's like, oh, and then I pulled myself up out of the water, says the pirate in the sub comic on the comic within a comic, and then the next page or the next thing is something coming up out of water in the main story, and it's like, yeah, this is good. I liked it when it was like either a bit more consistent throughout an issue, but now it seems it's just like, oh yeah, I've got to remember, we've got a story to tell here, but we've got to remember to do it in that clever style where someone says something and then it's reflected over here. So while I do appreciate that the story is moving on, it's kind of cluttered with the references and with the framework and all that kind of stuff. We do get another little glimpse of what was going on the island with a squid, which was pretty good, but that kind of just been, it feels like it's just been forced in there. It's like, oh, this is going to be important later on. Remember this. In 2 issues' time, this is going to be important. So, and then at the end, the supplementary material that we get at the end is some funny stuff with Ozymandias and his agents and his merchandising company saying, hey, we're going to do this. This is going to be the new line of toys. This is going to be the new perfume. What was the last thing as well? Oh, yeah, and the Veet method, an introduction. You know, hello, if you're reading this, it's because you sent away for my course. What do you want? Do you need a change in life? A better body? Increased confidence and magnetism? Advanced mental techniques that will help you at home or in business? So, yes, Adrian Veet, otherwise known as Ozymandias, seems to be the main guy. It is 2 minutes to midnight. Woo! Let's get on to issue 11. It's issue number 11. Look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair. Now, this is a weird one, because I always thought that, hey, okay, Ozymandias, I only know Ozymandias as the name of Rameses II. I always got, like, the pyramid connection between Ozymandias, the superhero, Adrian Veet, and Rameses II, but I didn't make the connection with the Gordian knot, which has come up all the way through this, until right at the very beginning of this issue. We start in this, you know, we go down to his Antarctica base, and we see the outside of the Antarctica base with the guys coming in, with Night Owl and Rorschach coming in, and then we see Ozymandias inside, and he turns around, and there's this picture of someone dressed in the same kind of outfit as him, cutting through a rope, and I was like, oh, that's going to be the Gordian knot, that's going to be the most important thing, and then I was like, okay, so now that explains, you know, who was breaking into these places all the time, because there was the lock company, which kept on coming and repairing locks and putting in new locks, and, you know, all the locks were made of, you know, of it was the company Gordian Knot. And then it says, oh, look at this, and then they're back into, you know, back in New York, and there's the newspaper seller, he's going partying, Holocaust coming, goddamn knot hairs got a party, no, the knot heads got a party, the knot heads are the Nazi, neo-Nazi group, which have got the top knots on top of the on top of the heads, of the hair going up like that, and I thought, oh, so it's all about this. And then, as I was a bit afraid of back in issue number 9, I thought, oh, issue number 9, they're going to go and see Ozymandias, and we're going to get Ozymandias' backstory, and now we get Ozymandias' backstory exactly how I thought, and it's telling Alexander the Great story. Of course, the Gordian knot, I knew that was going to be in there, but I didn't realize, I didn't put it together that when Alexander the Great went into Alexandria, they called him Rameses II Reborn, as in the new King of Kings, and that is, of course, Ozymandias from the Shelley poem. So yeah, this book is, this one is called Look Upon My Works, Ye Mighty. No, what is it? Yeah, Look On My Works, Ye Mighty. Which is a very famous poem quote from Rameses II, or about Rameses II. So, yeah, so we get lots of Ozymandias' backstory, which, again, kind of, it would have kind of ground the story to the whole, but for one of the first times ever, they're actually telling backstory in where it's important to the plot. Of course, he's sort of saying his motivations of what he's been doing and his big plan. But what I really like about this is that he's telling it at the same time as there's other drama going on, where Rorschach is trying to grab him and arrest him, and Ozymandias is just like, nope, nope, not going to happen. Oh, no, not going to happen. And every attempt he makes, he's like, okay, that didn't work either. And at one point, it looks like he's going to make an attempt at arresting or somehow grabbing Ozymandias, even though there's no real action, there's no real plan there. It's just like, oh yeah, we got to go down there and stop this guy. And I can't remember the lynx's name, but the big cat, the mutant big cat that he's got, the genetically engineered big cat. We're just seeing it from his point of view, and Night Owl goes, oh, no, look down there, and like, oops, like that. So that's pretty fun. Yeah, so it's good stuff. I did like the conclusion. I really enjoyed the conclusion to the pirate story, the pirate comic within a comic thing. That is, of course, is Ozymandias' story, kind of. Well, not really, but it's like what happens to all of the heroes. I really enjoyed the way that's played in there. And then, yes, of course, we've got the overall plan. Ozymandias is meant to be the most intelligent man in the world, and it turns out his plan is pretty fucking stupid. Maybe it's not. Maybe it'll work. I don't know what's going to happen. But Night Owl and Rorschach are like, really? Really? That's the plan? And I'm like, really? That's the plan? Yes. In Strange Things. So it starts off with the first view is this white, completely white background with a little mark on it, like a little view through into the tropical tropical thing, tropical island he has built inside Antarctica. And then at the end, everything in New York turns white because all of the plot lines, all of the different characters all seem to get together in one place. We've got the taxi driver and a Nazi girlfriend. We've got the guy reading the comics, Bernie, his name is, and the guy selling the newspapers, another Bernie. We've got the psychologist who turns up and his wife and his story comes together as well. And who else was it? Oh, yeah, and then there's the detective who is looking at, and at the end, everything in New York turns white. It's 1 minute to midnight. I don't know what's going to happen next, but I guess it's got something to do with that squid. The supplementary material at the end is after the masquerade, which is an interview. Doug Roth visits Antarctica to interview Adrian Veidt, and yes, and it's talking about who he is and why his parents are rich and stuff like that. It seems like quite an interesting guy. In closing, you've often been referred to as the press as the world's smartest man. Is that true, and does it bother you? No, that isn't true, but it's very flattering. I don't mind a bit. If someone wants to call me the world's best groomed man, then hey, that's okay too, laughs. No, I don't mind being the smartest man in the world. I just wish I wasn't this one, which is quite a funny little fitty quote there. And then at the bottom of this, there's the times they are a change in. Nostalgia by Veidt. It turns out that perfume in the other comic was one of Veidt's perfumes. That's the one that was smashed on Mars as well. Yeah, so 1 minute to midnight. Let's get through to this final issue and see how the story wraps up. I'm expecting squids. A squid. So here we go. It's issue number 12, and this one is, yes, of course, the very last issue in the whole of the Watchmen series. This one is called A Stronger Loving World, and it starts off with a squid. And I thought this was gonna, I know I even said in the last issue, oh, it's gonna arrive in New York dead and do this psychic thing. But I was like, oh, is that right? Did I read that properly? But of course, yeah, it does. And I'm thinking, well, so what's the, like, if this is meant to be a big extraterrestrial attack on Earth or something, it just makes you think, well, that wasn't, it was a successful in terms of a lot of damage, but it seems a bit weird. And I'm thinking, but like, if they're meant to believe that this is an alien attack or an extraterrestrial thing, didn't they use like human DNA in the brain or human brains? And there was like, it was genetically modified from like normal stuff. And I'm just thinking there's like, maybe back in 1985 or 87 or whenever this was written, I'm thinking, well, surely they had they knew what DNA was, you know, they could tell like life DNA, like human DNA apart from other DNA, even if they haven't sequenced everything. So like this whole idea, like, oh, he's the cleverest man in the world and he's going to be good, you know, he's going to stop all wars. It just seems really, really flimsy. And I thought the whole point of this was like, okay, what if like, you know, what if superheroes existed in a real world? And I thought it was meant to be a lot more real. Sure, it's a science fiction world. Sure, there's Dr. Manhattan walking through walls and teleporting himself and living in all times and stuff like that. But I still thought, like, the humans were still humans. Like, these are some of the most human superheroes, all damaged in some ways, all, like, psychopaths or freaks and weirdos and stuff. But they're more human, but then, like, the rest of the world seems less human because of this. The plan succeeded, and at the end, the only people who know the truth are the neo-Nazi fascist magazine publishers and other people who want to keep it quiet. You know, anyway, it's a strange a very strange mix of things that, you know, like the aspects of a story that I like, but and then also it's just really stupid. The whole thing is like, oh, so it was all that stupid all along, and yet the stupid succeeds. I do like how it succeeds. I think it's cleverly done, but overall it just seems like that was it all along. It's a bit of a disappointment. And most of the disappointment of the overall story is because I thought the overall story would have the same weight and import as all of the backstories, because the backstories kept on interrupting it. So I thought, oh, well, this is going to surely have a really big payoff, a really like surprising payoff, a satisfying payoff or something. Because like, if you're going to interrupt it all this time with all these other more interesting stories, even though I liked the backstories, like I say, they kind of got in the way of each other with the non-chronological storytelling. I just didn't feel that it all hung together. I liked the characters, you know, the characters were consistent all the way through, but it was a bit of a pity how it all came together. Things I liked about this last issue, I like the idea that the cat Bubastis, the genetically modified cat, I really like the idea that he is going to learn in the future, he's going to learn how to come back together, and he's going to be Cat Manhattan. Maybe there's some Watchmen fan fiction that talks about the cat being able to get himself back together, rebuild himself, and then be a big blue cat walking around doing cat stuff. A cat who lives throughout all time at all points and has got godlike superpowers, but then does cat kind of stuff. I quite like that idea. I like the idea that the fascists have got the answers. They know the truth and they're going to print it and everyone's going to go, oh, this is just a conspiracy theory. But it's a true conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. There's lots of facts to back it up. Rorschach's story, interesting ending. Dr. Manhattan, I like where he goes off. And then the couple of... Who were the number two heroes, the second Silk Spectre and the second Night Owl, kind of get together and leave it behind. I like the idea that the only two who didn't have their own identity are the two that can kind of escape. They don't become mad. They don't become mad. They realize that their personalities aren't like their creations. Their personalities weren't tied to their character creations, because that isn't them, you know. Rorschach's story ended and he took his mask off, and then his story ended was their character wasn't their creation, so when they take their masks off they can be fully human at the end, even when they're not superheroes anymore or mass vigilantes. Other stuff that I like, yeah, I quite like some of the visuals of this. It starts off with the clock, which looks like a smiley face, and now it's got blood on it, and there's splats and stuff. The whole series starts with somewhat like a smashed window, and this last issue starts with a smashed window and all the kind of crazy stuff going on in New York, and yeah, then the last final image reflects the first image as well, which brings me on to something that I think that it could bring a lot of depth, like a lot of stuff that could work out. There's a few things that are referenced visually that tie into the plot, which work well. But so much of this visual stuff and so much of the interlinking thing just doesn't add anything. And it's like, oh, right, so let's have a look at this first page here. And it's like the end of the world. And it's like Madison Square Garden. The bands that are playing are The Pale Horse and Kristallnacht. And you're like, okay, Pale Horse, very well done. Kristallnacht, well, like, Night of Broken Glass, and it's like smashed windows, a brother's picture that says Kristallnacht. You're like, oh, well, that's very clever. You know, like, what's the next one? Another picture. The movie that is playing in the Utopia cinema is The Day the Earth Stood Still. And you're like, isn't that a bit obvious? And there's like a sign that says one way and war, like a headline with war there as well. And there's the elephant airship that has crashed to, what's these other ones? I mean, there's just all of these little references. Oh yeah. And then the Promethean cab company bringing light to the world, another one way, fallout shelter, war, the Gordian knot thing. All of these things are kind of just crammed in together. And I understand what's like, it's just like the writer and the artist have just gone, right, What we need to do is just make loads and loads of allusions to other things and just, like, shove them all in there together. And I thought a lot of these things would come together in, like I say, in a more artful way, but in the end it just becomes, it's like a gimmick. It's just like references for references' sake. And at the beginning of the book, I thought, oh, this is going to be great because these references are going to tie together, all these visual clues are going to lead to something. But it's like just calling something Promethean and having war around doesn't actually, like, does it actually say anything? I'm not sure it does. It's like, oh, we will now be important and heavy, and we will put all these quotes in, and we'll put all these song lyrics in, and we'll quote this poem and quote this and have this and do this. And but, like, if it doesn't add to the story and if it doesn't add to the characters, it feels, it for me, it just became a distraction. And I kind of don't want those distractions. For example, it once said, oh, someone will be dying out like a mastodon. And then the next panel had, like, the blimp with the elephant floating by on it. And I was like, that's like they're just, like, nudging me in the ribs and going, ah, get it, mastodon. And now we've put an elephant on the next panel. Isn't that really clever? And I'm like, well, it seems like you had a lot of time to spend to think about all of this, and you put your lot of effort into that. But sometimes I'd rather, you know, rather the effort go into making the story cleaner, even though I know everything is intentional. And that's what I understand why so many people view this as an amazing work of fiction, and it is an amazing work of fiction. I do think it's a masterpiece, but in the end it kind of it's like it goes, right, now this is going to be important and we will do importance. And I think for lots of people who read comics a lot or graphic novels a lot, something like that turns their favorite art form into something important for them seems like a big step in one direction. Whereas this one, for me, I don't read a lot of comics, so this is like this is one of the first graphic novels I've read all the way through, and it just feels like it's trying too hard to be as important as a lot of these important novels try to be, the literary novels. And it's like, yes, and this illusion and that imagery and that thing there. And unfortunately, a lot of that stuff, I just don't care about it in fiction. Like, I like to do it. I like to see it. It makes me feel clever to do it, but it doesn't. It's very, very rare that anything like that has ever added to any narrative enjoyment or anything like that. So while one of the things that I think makes this so interesting, unfortunately, is one of the things that you know, makes it not interesting, like, kind of gets in the way of my enjoyment of it. What else do I have here? If I go back to my book, yeah, like, if I go to The Watchmen, like, the first thing with blood and a smiley face, and then it ends on a smiley face, it's like, does that mean anything, or is it just intentionally, self-consciously clever? Like at the end it goes, oh, what perfume are you wearing? I'm wearing nostalgia. And what are you doing? Oh, like, it's just like, does the fact that they're all wearing the same perfume and doing this, it's like, she had a bottle of nostalgia in her thing, and if she used that nostalgia spray, and then why would she be asking, what perfume are you wearing? What do you smell of? And he says, nostalgia. It's like, but you use nostalgia as well. And then at the end he says, oh, the new fragrance from Veet Industries is now Millennium. And it's like, yeah, but we knew that's what it was going to be, because I read the supplementary materials a few issues ago, and it says, oh, we're going to have this new thing. It's going to be the Millennium. It's good. Nobody's going to want nostalgia anymore. It's all going to be Millennium. And there are some issues which I think are a lot better than others. Unfortunately, for me, this whole thing kind of peaked around issue number 4 and 5, because in issue number 4, it's the out of time telling with Dr. Manhattan on Mars. I think that was amazing. And also issue number 5, where it's all about reflections. It's like the Rorschach, part of Rorschach's backstory, and the alternate colors of the panels. And this is this the one where they bring in the fearful symmetry, and they bring in the comic within a comic for the first time. And I love the comic within a comic. I thought all of that was very, very interesting. So, like I say, I don't think after issue number 4 and 5, there's only a few issues that came anywhere close, but overall it kind of goes downhill again. But otherwise, I really enjoyed reading it. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy reading it. I thought it was a very interesting thing. And just to reiterate, I can't remember exactly when I said this, but I think it's so great to read something which isn't, hey, in a world where there are fictional comic book heroes, what would it be like for somebody to become a real superhero? Instead, it says, in a world where there are no superhero comics or, you know, or very, very early on, what would the world be like if somebody did decide to become a real superhero comic and what they have? You know, the comic within a comic, I think, is a clear view of that. It's like, well, if superheroes are real and people don't like them, why would there be fiction about them? Why would people make comic books about them? So then the comics become about something else, about pirates, seems to be. You know, that's what it says. So again, some of this supplementary material. So it is now midnight. I've got all the way through to issue number 12. Apparently there's some more of these before Watchmen. I think they're still coming out at the moment, or maybe they've been collected together. I heard about that 2 years ago, 1 year ago. I'll get round to watching the movie at some point as well. I think I'm going to give this to Juliana, see what she thinks about that. We may do a follow-up on The Watchmen after we've watched the movie as well. I'm not quite sure. So I'm going to give this this book 4 stars. Like I say, there are some issues which are definitely 5-star fiction for me, but overall it just doesn't it doesn't work for me at the level that I think it does, like a lot of novels work for me. Maybe, again, maybe if I read more comics, this would mean more to me, or if I read less normal fiction, not graphic novels, if I read fewer novels, this would mean more to me. But 4 stars, pretty good. Very good, in fact, but not flawless. Right, that's it. You can email me, luke@juggler.net, if you enjoyed this weird experimental podcast where I update it as I go through. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. You can follow me on Goodreads. You can be my friend on Goodreads. You can join the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads. Also, a good thing to do is go to sfbrp.com, click on the episode links. The episode list links, and you can see every episode that I've done. You can sort them by author or book or by episode number or by star rating or by length of podcast. This is quite a long one, but I've done it in 12 parts. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time. Oh, and I forgot to mention, there is in some of the supplementary material, which is supposedly being written by Ozymandias, Agent Veet, the most intelligent man in the world, there, I found 2 typos, or at least one. I can't remember now. It was a few issues ago. That's wrong, right? He wouldn't make a typo if he's the most intelligent man in the world. Smartest man in the world. Why would there be a typo? But there was. Maybe that's part of the conspiracy. Ooh.